शिला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्रीदेव जी गोपाल जी की जय, श्री ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतन की जय, श्री वेणुगीत की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमान हरि हो। सो गुड इवनिंग, प्रणाम टू ऑल, वेलकम स्पेशली दोस हु आर कमिंग डे टुडे एंड एवरीवन ऑनलाइन कनेक्टेड एज वेल। सो वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग विद अ सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स अबाउट श्री वेणुगीता, व्हिच इज अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग सेक्शन ऑफ the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very interesting book, actually the main work for us as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, basically, from which a whole series of other scriptural currents spring from. Okay. So all the Goswami Granth and so on. So this Venugita appears in the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, the Bhagavatam, and it means the song of the flute. It's the first of six Gitas or six songs that are being sung by the gopis of Vrindavan, Venugita being the first one. All of them representing different stages in the development of their relationship with Sri Krishna, basically, and showing the different, mainly the different forms of what we call loving separation. We sometimes maybe think in terms of love just in terms of union in this world, but actually there's a whole science of separation and how to develop, increase our affection in separation, even a type of separation in which you have never met first, for the first time, your beloved yet, which is the type of separation depicted in this Venugita, called more specifically Purvarag, which means you have heard about your beloved, you have seen him on a distance, but there has not been an official acknowledgement and meeting from the two parts, but in that period the heart is being churned more and more. So this Venugita has to do with this, with the gopis singing as they hear Krishna's flute, Krishna's in the forest with his friends, with the cows, and the gopis, the milk maidens of Vrindavan, are in the village. They are not in the same place, but they hear Krishna's flute, and that flute is again stirring the dal, churning their hearts more and more, and they express there's the love in separation, their increasement of love in separation through song, in this case, in the form of the Venugita. So this chapter has 20 verses, and today we are seeing verse number 12, so we are a little bit more after the first half, and hopefully we can finish that during the rest of our stay here. We are seeing like one verse per class, with some exceptions, maybe. So, but as usual, we are doing always some also recap of our previous lecture. So today is which is meeting number 13. And we will see verse number 12. So let's make a brief summary of verse number 11, which we saw 2 weeks ago, where the gopis 2 weeks ago, I say 2 days ago. So the gopis are directing in all the verses. The general structure will be the gopis will direct their vision, their attention toward one particular species in Vrindavan. Animal species, vegetable species, not cat, sorry. But he wants his part in Venugita somehow. And tree and rivers and clouds, moving species, and they will appreciate and project their own bhav, their own love, and feeling how much they love Krishna, how much they have the chance of interacting with him, while we don't have that opportunity. And by lamenting in this transcendental way, their love just increases, basically. So today we will speak about particular beings, not from this planet, but from heavenly realms. But last class we spoke about the deer. The gopis speak about the deer. So they say, oh, this deer, who belong to a category of less complex species, less complex forms of life, who are not very much with a very developed discernment, if you will, they approach Krishna, Nandanandana, Nanda Maharaj's son, basically, who is very beautifully dressed, who is playing his flute. And both the female deer as well as their husbands approached him and worshipped Krishna. with silent glances, affectionate silent glances, pranaya, avalokya. That was the main offering, no? Silent, loving silent glances. Pretty substantial, if you know what we are speaking about. So we explain how generally the deers are famous for being totally charmed by the flute sound of the hunter, and the hunter may play a flute, and the deer just go without discrimination. So somehow the gopis are, again, projecting their own situation as when Krishna plays the flute, we lose all discrimination. We just run after that clarion call, if you will. So the gopis will say, well, that's foolishness in the case of deer, but in connection to Krishna, their foolishness becomes their greatness because they hear Krishna's flute and they just run after that without any consideration. Dhanya, that's their glory. Glories are this deer. We make some play of words between dhanya, which is good fortune, and dainya, which is humility also. So also we say how these deer are famous for moving slowly, and sometimes the slow movement is because the deer generally move quite pretty quickly, but out of ecstasy, out of the charm of love, they start to move like intoxicated. When you drunk a little bit more than usual, you start to lose some speed, basically. So they are intoxicated with divine love here. So the deer start to move contrary to their natural speed, basically. And we also spoke about Krishna. Krishna may not be the ordinary hunter, but he is the divine hunter in Vrindavan, while playing the flute and calling everyone, haunting everyone, hunting and haunting everyone, we mentioned. So everyone in Vrindavan is having that experience. The sound of the flute play sounds and everything else collapses. All the functions just merge into that call. So the gopis here address Krishna as Nanda Nandanam, which can mean the son of Nanda, the Nandana of Nanda, or also if we take Nanda as an abbreviated form of Ananda, as we can, will mean he who gives bliss to bliss itself. He who gives Ananda to Ananda. Without him, Ananda makes its no meaning. No? So he who gives ecstasy to ecstasy. He who is the very form, personification of that. So then the gopis continue appreciating not only the fortune of the female deers by being able to go behind Krishna without discrimination, but they are accompanied by their husbands. Their husbands are not being opposed to that meeting. They are not saying, what are you doing? I'm your husband. They're actually promoting that, pushing them, go. Not only go, let's go. The two of us, let's go. So the gopis cannot avoid compare that situation with their situation. And our husbands are not that way. Our husbands are obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. But their husbands are Krishna Sara. That's the name of the male deer. Krishna Sara, referring to the black deer, which also means he who takes Krishna at his very Sara or essence. Or also can be Sara, abbreviated from Abhisara, which means love journey. So here the male deers are accompanying their wives in their love journey toward Krishna. So the gopis say, well, we say before that the deer were muddha, which were like with low discernment, but we realize that actually our husbands are the muddhas here. No? Because they are not joining us as they should, as the male deers are joining their wives and so on. So in this way, the gopis with full humility start to pray, may we become deers in our next life. We have been cursed by the creator with this human body, female body that cannot approach Krishna in proximity. Hopefully we can be born as deers in our next birth. And with every birth, they will be presenting a prayer in that same direction. May we be born as the flute. May we be born as whatever is the main character of the verse. And finally, the verse ended saying the gopis, how they are worshipping Krishna, the gopis, the deers, with their loving silent glances. Their silent glances attain the position of upachar, of an element to be offered in worship. That's all they have. You know, the deers cannot offer a peacock feather or take a deepa and make an artic and so on. So they have their glances, the windows of their heart, and they are just saying it all through those windows. And Krishna is accepting because he realized, oh, they are giving me everything they have. So I'm giving myself fully in proper reciprocation. And as we mentioned, just a final note was that one name of Shirada is she who has deer-like eyes. So sometimes Krishna looks in Shirada's eyes And he's reminded of the deer. So now the gopis are asking, maybe now Krishna's in the forest and seeing so many deers. Maybe he's remembering us now, that he's seeing into the deer's eyes. Maybe this happened in the opposite way. When seeing Radha, he remembers the deer. When seeing the deer, he remembers Radha. And of course he does. Of course, he's properly reciprocating. They are absorbed in him, therefore he must be absorbing them. Yatamam prapadam kritam sadaiva vijamyam. So, some of the acharyas mentioned this verse was spoken by a group of married gopis. Because again, they are projecting their situation with their husbands at home and the obstacles they represent and how, in the case of the deer, this is not happening and creating this contrast. And they say the next verse, which is today's verse, will be also spoken by married gopis. Because that will also include a couple. In this case, the couple will be devis and devas. The goddesses and the gods. So we go from the animal kingdom on earth, take a vimana, and let's go to the heavenly planets for a minute. to heaven, because they are descending to our sight, but still not touching the ground. No? It is said that the devas never touch the ground. They kind of walk. They have their aircrafts, you say, airships, and they are just like floating here. They don't. So let's go to verse number 12. Mm-hmm. Where it will describe how the goddesses in their divine airplanes basically become stunned by hearing the sound of the flute, and their ornaments become loose because of ecstasy. So, we can recite all together in Sanskrit. The meter is always the same, but Santa Tilak says like this. Krishnam nirikshavanitot savarupasilam Shrutva chatatkvanita bernu vivikta gitam Devyo vimana gataya smaranunna sara Brashyat prasunna kavara mumuhur vinivya. So, translation says, Krishna's beauty and character create a festival for all women. Indeed, when the demigods' wives, flying in airplanes with their husbands, catch sight of him and hear his resonant flute song, their hearts are shaken by Cupid, and they become so bewildered that the flowers fall out of their hair and their belts loosen. So this is verse number 12. Describing the effect of the flute in this case in the devis and the devas, as we'll see, as perceived by the gopis. Remember, all this is being sung by the gopis, whatever they're seeing through the lens of their own bhav. Always bear in mind that they are feeling something in particular, and they are also, they are projecting their own feelings to the environment. Although the environment has their own experience of Krishna, in this case, what we mainly see is gopis experience, like not imposed but projected into every single other personality. So let's see word by word a little bit, and then some unpacking on the content of this verse. So gopis began saying Krishna Niriksha. So Krishnam Niriksha means observing Krishna. Remember, the devis are in heaven, not heavenly planets, but on our sky, basically, in their airplanes. So they are observing Krishna from that particular distance or perspective. So Krishnam Niriksha. Niriksha means to observe. So observing Krishna. Vanita. Vanita means for all women, ladies. Otsava. Otsav means festival. So here is Sandhi. It's a combined word. Vanitotsava. It's a festival for all women, basically. Rupa Silam. What's the festival for a woman? His Rupa and his Silam. Rupa means form, Krishna's form, and Silam means character, his personality, his attributes. And Rupa also can mean beauty. The word has two meanings, more than two, but in this case, Rupa means form or beauty, or beautiful form, basically. Between Krishna is the form of beauty, as our Gurus will say, so you cannot make too much of a difference. Krishna's form and Krishna's beauty. He's a form of beauty, and his form is beauty personified, so form of beauty. So that's the first line. So the devis are still, the devis are not mentioned, but Krishna, as you remember, generally the name of the personalities involved here appear later, not in the immediate first line. So observing Krishna, who is a festival for all women due to his beauty of its form and character, Shrutva cha tat konita venu vivikta gitam. Shrutva cha means hearing, no? So now comes the flute. First observing, looking at Krishna's form, beauty, character, attributes, and now hearing. Shrutva cha. Cha means and. Shrutva, hearing. Tat konita. Tat konita means like vibrated by him. So you can imagine what's the next word after vibrated by him. You see there? Venu. That's the word appearing in every single verse almost. Venu means flute, referring to his flute. Venu bibikta gitam. Then we have the word gitam, song. And bibikta in between. Bibikta means like distinct or very clear. He played a very clear song. We will explain a little bit more the implications of that. So they were hearing the very specific, distinct song of the flute. So now, whom? Still, they are not mentioned yet. So whom? Third line. Debyo vibhana gatayashmara nunna sara. So debyaha means the goddesses. So there come finally the people affected in this particular verse, the devis. Debyo. And where are they? Vimana gataya. Vimana means vimana. You have heard like the celestial airships in which the devas and devis travel. And gataya means traveling. So vimana gataya means traveling in their airplanes. So the goddesses witness such an incredible scene. And what's the reaction of that? Now comes in the rest of the verse. Smara nunna sara. Smara, you remember what does it mean, smara? I mentioned that word in the one of the first classes. Cupid, exactly. So smara means cupid or romantic agitation. Remember, this is in connection to Krishna, so there's no scope for limited romanticism, but fully transcendental. And nuna sara. Nuna means agitated. And shara in this case means their hearts. So their hearts became agitated by Cupid. Or by the Cupid of Cupids. We'll see. One of the name of Krishna is Madan Mohan. Madan means Cupid or Madan Gopal. Madan means Cupid. Madan Mohan is he who cupidizes Cupid. Cupid. So he has the topmost level of cupidity in him. And the last line says, Brashyat prashunna kavaram mamuhur binibhya. To a further explanation, which are the symptoms of that influence of Cupid in the devis. So Brashyat means falling, are falling, water falling. Prashunna kavara. Prashunna kavara means the flowers that are tied in their braids, in their hair. So the devis are decorated with different flowers in their hair and braid, and all of them are falling from the sky, and somehow they're doing Puspanjali on Krishna. Unintentionally, but naturally, from the trembling and the ecstasy, this is coming and this is falling on him. So, Brashyat Prashunna Kavara and Mumuhur Binibhyaha. And Mumuhur means bewildered, like Bimohan, Mumuhu, they become bewildered, and Binibhyaha, their belts loosening. In a state of bewilderment, their belts start to loosen. Sometimes it is described that because of separation, they experience separation and their body becomes consumed and they become thinner. So because they become thinner, the belts loosen. So this is a little bit the word by word of the verse. And we'll try to unfold a little bit now. So always we have to bear in mind every single verse has some connection with the other one. So there is some continuity, some thread, some connection between one and the other. As we mentioned, this verse and the previous one is spoken by married gopis who are like very much, if you will, affected by the reality of their husbands opposed to themselves running after Krishna. And in this case and in the previous verse, they are seeing couples, as we'll see, are joining together in their devotional project, basically. And Sanatana Goswami also adds something else similar to the previous one. He says in his purport, in connection to the last verse, that the gopis here say of that group, How astonishing is the glory of those female deer, remember previous verse, that abide in Braj and go in proximity to Krishna. Can even the good fortune of the high-flying goddesses be described? And there comes this verse, no? Something like that. So the gopis like wonder about the good fortune of some species, and then their attention goes, and what about that? And they go, and wow, they are even more fortunate, and even more fortunate, and so on. So, in this verse, basically, we are depicted with, interestingly, the name that appears here for Krishna is, which one? Krishna. Now we have Nandanandan, we have Achyuta, we have some other names here. The name is Krishna. So as you know, Krishna means different, many things, but one of them is like irresistibly attractive. No? Like too much. No? Even for himself, as Shastra says. He's so attractive that he himself, Vishmapanam Sastitya Sova Garden, Parampadam Bhushana Bhushanam, he himself become attracted to himself. Sometimes he's looking at himself on a reflection of some pillar of emerald or something. He says, oh, who is that? So such a beautiful. Oh. He cannot even finish the sentence. He's like, oh. And he gets lost and found in himself. I say, oh, it's me. Parampadam Bhushana Bhushanam on the bottom. So he's so beautiful that when he uses ornaments, actually he's not using ornaments to beautify himself, but the ornaments become beautified by getting close to him. So he's a form of beauty, as he mentioned. No? So here all these things are implied. No? Krishna's smiles, laughter, silent glances, speech, mannerisms, all his movements are totally irresistible for everyone. Not even the people of Vrindavan and in this planet. Here the verse like overflows into Swarga, something like this. All attractive means all attractive, not limited to planetary system, human species, or animal species. As the gopis say, Sakshan Manmata Manmata. When Krishna is returning after disappearing, and the gopis singing Gopi Gita, we are going a little bit further here. But Sukadeva Goswami describes his entrance like Manmata Manmataha. He is basically the conqueror of Cupid again. The one who conquers, the one who conquers everyone else. And Cupid conquers everyone else, Krishna is conqueror of the one who conquers everyone. So here the devis are having darshan of this Cupid of Cupids and hearing his poisonous flute, not poisonous in the sense of totally mesmerizing, enchanting, and they become affected by the great jwal, kama jwal, or the great fever of romantic attraction. When you have fever, you start like to see other reality. When it's too much fever, you have like to become delirious, you see. So here we have the devis, which are generally very aristocratic, heavenly ladies who know how to behave properly in every situation. They are totally like mesmerized, you know, by the sound of the flute, sitting on their heavenly airplanes and passing out, basically, you know, next to their husbands, as you can imagine. And they cannot just like calculate or control yourself. You know, all their gravity, the church is being thrown off by Cupid. You know, Cupid comes, takes their gravity, Gaudhari. And they fall in front of their husbands and they faint on the laps of their husband by the sound of the flute. And the gopis again imply here, on top of that, in connection to the previous verse also, the husbands, by witnessing such a situation, instead of becoming jealous, which may be the normal course in this world, they admire the mode of their wives. Say, wow, they're so fortunate. And they start to hanker that themselves. Similar to the Krishna Sara deer, to the male deers in connection to the female deers. And of course, the conclusion of all this is, the gopis see such a situation and they themselves say, oh, we are so unfortunate. We have to be born as devis in order to have such a complementary people that may help us facilitate this meeting with Krishna, basically. And their Purva Rag again is increasing. Every verse that is passing in the Venu Gita, the Purva Rag of the gopis is growing exponentially and taking them closer and closer to their union with Krishna, which will happen in the Rasa Panchadya, Rasa Lila. Still some chapter from here. So I would like to share today some, since we are speaking about the effect of the flute and how the flute is having an effect not only on earthlings, as they say, but even on interplanetary constellations and so on. I would like to describe some things that Srila Rupa Goswami quotes in his writes, in his Vidagdha Madhav, about the like the cosmic effect of the flute, basically. Not affecting only humans here or animals and so on, but even other entities. So he says, when Brajendra Nandana Sri Krishna strikes a note of his, on his flute upon entering Vrindavan, basically the same situation, all the clouds stop moving. Eventually we'll get to the clouds in another verse. Tumburu, the topmost master of the Gandharvas, is struck with wonder. He's generally known for singing, but at this point he becomes just like, remaining one note forever, flabbergasted. Sanat Sanandan and the other sons born from the mind of Brahma break their deep meditation. These very sober, unshakable, unmovable sages are totally moved. Their meditation is interrupted and they are thrown into another meditation. Brahma, the creator himself, becomes spellbound. Again, Vimohan, foreheads spinning like nothing. Bali Maharaj, residing in Sutal Loka, so you see the verse is taking us into all different sections of the universe. Now we go to Sutal Loka, lower planetary system. Bali Maharaj there becomes agitated by the various types of desires sprouting in his heart, we hear in the flute. And if you want to go even below that, the head of Sheshanag, Ananta Shesh, which is just on the very basis, which is holding the earth, starts to spin. In this way, the Venunada, or the sound of the flute, pervades all the three worlds, thereby creating an upheaval throughout the entire universe. So again, it's not that Krishna plays the flute and just the ones in close proximity become affected. It's just creating a universal collapse or something. And let me share something that Srila Prabhupada writes in his Nectar of Devotion, paraphrasing Sri Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Speaking about the flute, let's get a little bit technical for a moment. I mentioned this for the other some of the classes, but let's mention that more specifically now. There are three kinds of flute that Krishna has. I mentioned that more than once, so you should remember. Morli? No, Pitambara is a cloth.
Oh, yeah.
Yellow cloth. Benu?
Bamsi.
Bamsi. Very good. Now we will go into that. Okay. Let's begin with the... I mean, that's the gross description, the main one. Now we have subdivisions in these three. So let's read what Srila Prabhupada mentioned. He said, there are three kinds of flute used by Krishna. One is called Benu, one is called Murali, and the third is called Bamsi. Benu, the one who is the main character of this section, Benu is very small, not more than 6 inches long, with 6 holes for whistling. Murali is about 18 inches long, with a hole at the end and 4 holes on the body of the flute. The Bamshi flute is about 15 inches long, with 9 holes on its body. Krishna used to play on these three flutes occasionally when they were needed. Necessity is the mother of invention. Krishna has a longer Bamshi. Now we will do this to the subdivisions among these three main divisions. Krishna has a longer Bamshi, which is called Mahananda or Sammohini. Mahananda means great bliss, Sammohini means full mesmerizement or something. When it is still longer, it's called Akarshini. Akarshini means attractor. And when it is even longer, it is called Anandini. Blissful. In female context. Because remember, the Bamsi is female. The Anandini flute is very pleasing to the cowherd boys and is also named Bamshuli. These flutes were sometimes bedecked with jewels, sometimes they were made of marble, and sometimes of hollow bamboo. When the flute is made of jewels, it is called Sanmohini. When made of gold, it is called Akarshini. So, a little bit of technical description of different flutes and names and sizes and materials. And since we are in that type of mood, let's get even more technical. And let's mention about, there's also mention about this, the different notes of the flute and different effects of each one of the notes. So we have 7 notes in music. I think all of you are familiar with that. Maybe not with the names in Indian music, Sari, Gama, Pad, Ha, Ni. In English you use the letters, right? In Spanish we have Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si. Very similar to Sari, Gama, Pad, Ha, Ni. So each one of the notes has a particular like target, if you will. So let's go to through each one of them and to see who are the target of that particular note. So the first note of the scale, if you will, maybe whatever the rag of the melody you may play, these are the 7 notes, is sa. Sa. So it is said that sa is breaking the meditation on of personalities such as Brahma and Shiva. Like this could be a similar example here. And personalities like Ananta Dev, which again, after hearing the flute, his head started like move like in hypnosis, sustaining the whole creation. And maybe here on earth we have some tsunami or something. That may mean Ananta Dev is like spinning a little bit. So that's sa, in the first note, pointing to that particular group. It is said that D, sometimes called it A, it's creating the effect of the Jamuna going backwards. So you never see a river going in one direction and suddenly starts to go to another direction. It's like, it's not happening. But Krishna plays the D, the second note, and the Jamuna starts to alter her nature, basically. The third note, Ga, it is said that it makes the moon stop moving. The moon remains like totally paralyzed, like Stamba. So it points to the moon in this case. Ma, the fourth note, has a target, the cows. I say that the cows hear the sound and they run after Krishna. We'll see them. Next verse will be about cows and calves. But it is said that they run after Krishna, but also they get stunned, as we mentioned the other day. No? 2 types of ecstasy. You go running after the beloved, but so much is inside that you collapse and paralysis is there. And you just become stunned hearing the sound of the flute, ma. Then we have pa, which is a famous 5th note, which is pretty much connected to the gopis. So it is said that in the same way that the previous one makes the cows run to Krishna, the 5th note is making the gopis run to Krishna. Sometimes the 5th note is compared to the sound of the cuckoo bird. So you can hear the cuckoo and you can play some instrument and play the pa, and you say pa, pa, they're singing. And that the birds sing in particular notes, basically. And interestingly, the cuckoos are quite connected with the realm of romantic love. In along the human culture, it is said that cuckoos... Cuckoos, you say? Mm-hmm.
Cuckoo. Yeah.
Cuckoo. Not with S.
Cuckoos, yeah.
Cuckoos? Okay. Yeah. So they play like a crucial role in human culture for thousands of years. For example, to say that in Europe, cuckoos are associated with spring season, at least in some places. And also with an adulterous woman deceiving her husband. So quite applicable to the gopis, basically. And also in Japan, I hear that the cuckoos represent, how is it in English? Unrequited love? Unrequited? Unrequited love. Like not non-correspondent, you say in English?
Yeah.
Non-correspondent love? Something like that, yeah. And in India, of course, cuckoos are also sacred. It is said that they are sacred to Kamadev, to the god of cupidity himself, the god of romantic desire, the god of romantic longing. Cuckoo is there as soundtrack music with him always. So 5th note is connected with all of this. Then we go to Dha, which is to say that this is the sound that makes the stones melt. So if there is something difficult to melt, it's a stone. But Krishna's flute can do that with invoking the Dha. And also it invokes the autumn season, that note in particular. And then we have Ni, which is the 7th note, which manifests all seasons. Whatever season may be required, and all simultaneously Ni is coming. I need to say that then comes sa again, because you have the first sa, and you go again, no? Sa re ga ma pa da ni sa. Again, you have the same sa. Sa, sa. It's the same note, but I don't know how to say in English. One eighth?
Octave.
Octave more. So that that second high sa is meant exclusively for Sri Radha, it is described, no? When Krishna plays that one. And he's calling her specifically, and she comes running to him. And in his famous scene when Krishna is calling her with such urgency, and Sri Radha is hearing that urgency, her name being mentioned there, Krishna is about to die in separation, and she just ran however she is, and she will, in the ecstasy, she will try to decorate for a minute, but her mascara will go to decorate her feet, and the, how do you say, lipstick will be like the eyeliner, and the earrings will be like the bracelets, and the ankle bells will go as a necklace, and she will come with that messy beauty. Messy beauty. And Krishna will be especially charmed. Wow, messy. That's incredible. He sees the background of that. No, he can understand. Wow. You didn't do that in purpose. That was actually, that shows the degree of your absorption, your urgency. You reciprocated with my urgency. So. That's is for her. And of course, we are speaking about notes, but generally when Krishna is playing the flute, mostly we are speaking not only about which note he's playing, but which raga he's playing. I don't want to torture you with the technicalities of Indian music and the terms, but raga is even difficult to translate. What's a raga? But it's a composition that is made of different notes which are played in a particular way, with ascending and descending moves, which have the purpose of invoking rasa, particular experience, sacred aesthetic experience, basically. So I'd like to read something which is from Guru Maharaj's forthcoming book, which is describing a little bit how Krishna place a particular raga directed to Sri Radha in this connection. So we go from note now to the raga, to all those notes presented in a particular way in the form of raga. It says like this. This is welcome in Sakya Mandalam. Krishna retired that night filled with thoughts of Radha, whose glance during the festival pierced his heart. Of course, this is in a moment where they already were united and so on. In order to express his suffering to her, he played the Kedar Raga, appropriate for the first 3 hours of the night, on the flute Shiva has given to him. So after the Govardhan Lila, Shiva gave a flute to Krishna. He had flute before, but he received a particular flute. So again, we see each raga is also ideally to be played in a particular moment of the day, in a particular division of the day. And also ragas for particular seasons and so on. So he played Kedar Raga, which is appropriate for that moment with that particular flute Shiva gave to him. This raga is highly non-linear, and in its ascent movement, aroha, only 6 notes are used, and its descent, or avaroha, ascending and descending movement, employs all 7 notes of the scale. So this is also something with the raga. It not only uses the notes in a particular way, but in the ascending movement may use some and some not, descending all or some and so on. This raga is identified with Shiva and is considered the best raga for expressing romantic bhakti rasa. The word Kedar also means field. And thus, Govinda created a musical field in which the gopis sowed the seeds of their desire for his company, acknowledging their attraction to him. However, Radha, for whom the melody was primarily intended, upon hearing it, lost consciousness altogether. So Krishna basically was sending a message primarily to Radha, and she heard the message, but she collapsed in the context of doing so. Or sometimes he's calling the gopis and all the gopis go. You say that in Rasa Lila that happened. He's calling primarily Sri Radha, but all the gopis are included as different expressions of her moods. And all of them come to Rasa Lila, but in the beginning Krishna sees a multitude of gopis and looking at all of them, but looking for one in the crowd. and the one is not there, Radha. And one may say, oh, she didn't come, she doesn't love Krishna that much. No, she loves Krishna that so much that she just heard the sound and fainted, collapsed. She was not able even to go and run. She just lose consciousness on the spot. Eventually she will come, of course. So, let's continue. Today may take a little bit more than usual, with your permission. We have new guests, so we want to... let's go to some of the expressions in the verse. Vivikta Gitam, remember? Vivikta meant distinct, clear, distinct, very clear and defined sound. I mentioned all the other things to put more in context what we are hearing now. So Krishna is playing a flute in a very distinct way. It means a very specific call to every specific person, very individual. Krishna is an individual. We are individuals here. He's individual and everything is supremely individual. The way he's addressing and expecting to relate with each of us is totally specific. Specific. And we are trying to tread the path of Raga Nuga Bhakti, which, as one devotee one defined, it could be called the path of specificity. It's very specific. It's not generic, abstract at all. Hey, God and me, and somehow we approach him. No, it's very detailed. And interestingly, there's another meaning for bibhikta, apart from specific, and Sanatana Goswami gives that meaning, which is with gaps. So Krishna plays his flute song with gaps. And so he played a little bit his melody, and he stopped to give a pause to the gopis and everyone in Vrindavan to ruminate on that, to digest that, to recover, depending on the case, to digest the nectar of the flute, which is really condensed ambrosia. So if he plays a little, he gives us a break to digest, to ruminate. When you are about ready to... Okay, he continued. So that's another way of understanding the expression, Bibhikta Gitam, the song of Krishna, playing with some intervals, basically. So here the gopis again, going a little bit to the general idea of the verse. The gopis are lamenting. Again, the main object is heavenly damsels, someone from other planet, basically. And the gopis are lamenting. We are gopis. Krishna is Gopa. We belong to the same village. We were born just next to each other. Our conjugal attraction for him is natural. We were born together. We know him from... And he's appearing as a human, but he's attractive even to the gods. Generally, that's not happening. Sometimes it's said that the standard of beauty in the heavenly planets, to say in some way, is like the most beautiful person on earth is the ugliest person in heavenly planets. Something like this, no? For us to understand how relative is the idea of beauty. Because we sometimes may see a body combined in a particular form, say, oh, so beautiful. But if you see a cockroach, you say, oh, I don't think I will fall in love with her. But they fall in love among each other and they're totally mesmerized, no? And they say, oh, such beautiful. And they are like, but it's not that you see a cockroach and it's like, oh, Cupid is coming and to visit me. Like, you start to scream, ah. What about the spider? What do you say, man? No? Today in the morning we had that darshan. We were singing and spider. Nobody said, oh, Cupid, so much cupidity is there. Everyone says, take her out of the temple. So the idea of beauty is so relative. No? Even on the human scale, no? In previous centuries, if a lady was a little bit fat, that was considered more beautiful than if she was like this. No? But now the standard is another. So it's also changing among one's similar species, what's beautiful, what's not beautiful. So it's so much on a relative level. But the point is, the gopi is saying, we are of the same species with Krishna. Krishna is a human being. Human beauty in comparison with demigods is no comparison, but everyone is attracted to him, even the ladies of the heavenly planets. So the gopis say, we thought we were attracted to him because we are humans, we are the same species, like cockroach with cockroach, human with humans. But now a lady from heaven comes and is totally attracted to Krishna also. So it's not only that we humans or even some other species from the earth, you know, other animals as we see the deer, but people from other planets become equally mesmerized. So Wow. Huh? That's a way of saying our attraction is justified, basically. Because they know some people will condemn our attraction to Krishna, but everyone is being attracted to Krishna, even people from other planets. Even the goddesses are attracted to him. So, what to speak of us? We are same species, same bilis, same varna, and so on. So, it is totally justified, basically. It's not our fault that we are attracted to Krishna. It's his fault that he's all attracted. He's Krishna, basically. That's why he's called Krishna in this birth, the all attracted. He's so beautiful in this verse. His beauty is described as Banitotsav. Again, a festival for all women. For everyone, actually. Here it's specifically to ladies because they are the main target of the verse. But his beauty is called Utsav. Krishna is a festival himself of beauty. And that's why we, as practitioners, organize different festivals. What do we do in the festivals? Mostly try to speak about Krishna's beauty, which is in a festival in itself. So we organize festivals because Krishna's beauty is a festival. So we just need to open the mouth and try to say something about Krishna. That's a festival. His beauty is a festival, basically. And of course, as we always say, his beauty corresponds with the love of his devotees. Do not forget that. The more beautiful Krishna becomes, the deeper the love that is making him so beautiful. And of course, here we have the gopis as the ultimate example of that. When Krishna went to Mathura, the ladies of Mathura when saw Krishna entering after so long, he never went to Mathura. First time, they were seeing him for the first time. They say, Gopiyata pakima charat yadamo sharupan lavanya sarama samordham ananya shidam drik bipi vantyanu sabavi navam durapan ekanta dham yasya sasri ashwarasya. Say, oh, which austerities must the gopis in Vrindavan have performed to drink the beauty of Krishna on a daily basis as they did all these years in Vrindavan? This beauty is the topmost form of elegance, the essence, saran, labanya, sarama, samordham, ananya, shidam, is eternally ever perfect. Asamordham has no equal, no point of comparison. Labanya, saram is the essence of elegance. All of that put together, that's Krishna. And they say, oh, but the gopis, they were the ones who were fortunate to see that beauty. In other words, they are glorifying the beauty of Krishna, but actually they are glorifying the love of the gopis that corresponds with that beauty. That's a very nice verse from the Bhagavad. So here he's describing it not only as Utsav, but Banitotsav, like a festival for all ladies. So why Krishna in particular is a festival for all ladies? Well, just pay a little bit of attention to all his other manifestations. He's for one reason or another, he's not very much able to accept the service of the lady community in his different forms. Now, for example, Kapila Dev, he's mostly absorbed in meditation. He's not paying attention to the seva of that the Vaishnavis may want to offer. Nara Narayan Rishi, celibate monks, no chance for ladies. Kurma, very busy, carrying the mountain on his head, so no chance for, excuse me, whatever. Matsya, also very busy, doing like a very like Moses-like task, putting different species on the big sheep and so on. Narasimha Dev, I mean, better do not get close to him. Lakshmi Devi say, I don't know him. I mean, she was there, say, he's my husband, but I've never seen him like that. He never gets like this in Vaikuntha. Ugrani Shrinka. So even her lady, Lakshmi, was like, I do not recognize him. Just in case I won't get closer, you go, Prahlad, please. And he went, oh, Parashuram, better not get that close. He's killing one generation after other of Kshatriyas, corrupted Kshatriyas. Ramachandra, he's not that wild as Parashuram, but Ekapatni Brat. As we know, he was in Dandakaranya. Some sages approached him, wanted to relate to him in romantic love. He said, as an ideal king, I made a vow of only one wife. So, next one. Next time I come and we will do it, basically. So, avatar after avatar after avatar, the ladies were like not able to So all the, how do you say, all the load for accepting the seva of the ladies fell on Krishna's shoulders. So he's fully willing, his original form, to accept that. And therefore, 16,108,000 wives, unlimited braja gopis, and everyone is welcome. So this way, in his original form, he's satisfying this approach of service. And that's why he's called here Vanitotsa. He's a festival for the lady community. The transcendental sense of the term. So, going to the devis for a moment, who are the main focus on this verse, they are feeling deep emotion by seeing Krishna's beauty, seeing his character, Rupa Shila, and hearing his Venu, Vivikta Gitam, specific song. So they show specifically that Charis mentioned a type of ecstasy called Motayita Bhava. Motayita Bhava. Rupa Goswami describes in Ujjval Nilamani, he says, that's the mood rising in the Naika, or the heroine, the lady lover, when she's either remembering or hearing about her lover, and the subsequent desire which arises from that mood. So this applies here to the devis, hearing about Krishna, and looking at him as well. And mumuhu means they faint. So in that situation, they lose consciousness. It's so much condensed attraction, so much beauty. Try to imagine, you generally do not faint out of beauty. You faint out of fear, or you faint out of, I don't know, anxiety, out of being nervous, out of desperation, depression, whatever. But not out of beauty. You are seeing something so beautiful that too much. Collapse. So that's happening here to the devis. And again, the devis have a pretty high standard of beauty, of contemplation. Everything in Swarga is like supremely like aesthetic, and all the apsaras and gandharvas and dance and song, and all in a very refined way. So they are accustomed to that level, but they are not accustomed to this level. So they see Krishna and mumuhu, they collapse. And again, fall on the laps of their husbands while they are flying in the skies in their airplanes, basically. Srila Jiva Goswami mentioned that this fainting, or this bhav that creates this fainting, is why they are unable to get closer to Krishna on the earth. They would like to get even closer to him, but they collapse on the way. So they see him, as we always say, no return ticket. No, there's no way of. You hear the flute? No. Sometimes they give the example of the. This is similar to Harikatha. No? You hear Harikatha, you are blessed with certain knowledge. Your consciousness becomes enlightened, and there is no coming back to some things that you were doing that you realize now, no, that was not the best way to conduct my life. It's like, sometimes the example given is like if you join the mafia. No. It's easy to enter, but difficult to go out. You are part of us now, you cannot leave us now. And if you want to leave, I don't know what can happen there. You cannot return, basically. No return ticket. So in this way, the devis are affected by Shmara. Remember, Shmara meant not Shyamananda, Cupid. So previous species mentioned in the Venu Gita, some of them were agitated in different ways, in their own way, in their own bhav, towards Krishna. I will see many more after, like the cows, we will see they are attracted to Krishna in Vatsalya bhav. But here the devis are affected by Shmara. Shmara is a very specific. I mean, everyone in Vrindavan is affected when they hear the flute, but only the gopis are affected in the context of Shmara, of romantic cupidity. And now the devis also get affected in that same way, according to the gopis' view. So the gopis find, someone else who is feeling like us, some empathy is there. And again, not only that, as some commentators say, but not only the devis are affected with romantic sensibilities, but their husbands, the devas, while hearing the flute, also start to develop some female sensibilities toward Krishna in that connection. Interestingly, the husbands are not mentioned directly in the verse. If you pay attention to my word by word, it never says the husbands of the gopis, but the acharyas all have concluded that since it described that the devis are traveling in their bimanas, in their airships, it is not the custom to see a lady from heaven traveling by herself in a bimana, but they're always accompanied by their husbands. So that's why the implication of the husbands are there. So again, the gopis are appreciating the good fortune of these devis and the fortune of the devas. They say the devas are people with high intelligence. We know that the devas have very fine buddhi. They exist in a subtle body even, not a body made of flesh and bones. So they note, they realize the condition of their wives. They do not become jealous. They do not become envious. But actually they feel, we are so fortunate that our wives have such an attraction. And they, the gopis are projecting this. The husbands are feeling that in that way, that they are organizing to take them on a trip regularly so their wives are having the darshan of Krishna on earth. So the husbands are like orchestrating the whole trip, if you will, so their wives are having the darshan in Vrindavan. And again, this is connected to the previous verse, the Krishna Sara, male deers taking their wives. Let's go to see Krishna together. But again, the gopis conclude and contrast, but our husbands are envious. Even if we breathe in the direction of Krishna, they cannot tolerate that. They have a problem even with that. If we sigh in that direction, that's already some. But again, here the devas are bringing the devis in vimanas to see Krishna, and they're understanding their attraction. They understand what's going on. They organize everything to facilitate that. Such facilitators. But our husbands?
Yeah.
Of course, no. One brief mention regarding the gopis' husbands. So sometimes we're speaking of them in terms of the so-called husbands of the gopis. Our acharya generally explained that, for example, in Golok, there's some verse. There are different versions, and I don't want to complicate your life that much, more than what I'm doing till now. But some acharyas mentioned in Golok, not in Gokul, in Vrindavan on earth, but in the other Vrindavan, the gopis do not have husbands in gross forms, if you will. But only the mood of having a husband is there. The bhav, if you will. But in order to further enrich that experience, which is Parakiya bhav, the experience of being a lover of Krishna, Yogamaya gives kind of physical form to those moods in the Vrindavan on earth, basically. So there, we hear the names of the husbands of the gopis and so on. And again, but it's all by the will of Yogamaya. The gopis marry some cowherd boys, and that creates the whole dynamic of Parakiya. But again, it's bhava, Parakiya bhava. It's a mood of that. But in tattva, or in actual reality, it is Swakiya. Means the gopis only belong to Krishna. Parakiya means it seems they belong to someone else, but they cannot but belong to Krishna. But Yogamaya makes that arrangement to show how much they belong to Krishna, to the point they are ready to transgress another so-called people who they belong to, or whatever, family, society, and all total transgression, total risk for the highest ideal. So in that sense, it is described that the weddings and the connection between themselves are more like a dream-like state, some form of sensation. It's there, but it's like whenever you hear, I don't know, Abhimanyu, but it's like a shadow in some place. You never see him like fully operating that much. You know, every single night he has to sleep in the cow shed for some particular reason. Or he has to go to buy some cows. So every night he's never there for some reason. So it's something like that. He's there, but he's never there. So it's like a subtle presence that creates this whole dynamics, basically. But of course, the gopis are not aware of that. If the gopis are aware, oh, this is Yogamaya's arrangement, that will create some sense of Aishvarya, which may like affect the lila. So that's not very, very healthy, if you will. So again, although they have this marriage for them, Srinandanandan, he's the all in all for them. And that's the idea. Parakiya bhav, but in tattva, swakiya. And that's why many say, that's why Srila Jiva Goswami made the emphasis he made. But that's another topic altogether. Swakiya and parakiya. Give me some few minutes. I want to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's one section of his purport to this verse. Continuing this line, he says, "The gods, who are extremely smart, do not become hostile to their wives." I mean, he's paraphrasing the thoughts of the gopis. "They do not become hostile to their wives, even after knowing about it. Rather, considering their own good fortune, they make them mount an aircraft and drive them to induce them to constantly see Krishna. But," there's always a but, "our husbands are just hostile." Hostile? "Therefore, the lowly does," remember the previous verse, "are eminent. The goddesses too are fortunate, but we, humans in between, are most unfortunate." No? The highly civilized heavenly people are so fortunate, the lowly animal species are so fortunate, we are in between, we are unfortunate. We humans do not have the chance that these species have. Their own husbands are bringing them, and so on. Baladevi Devotion shares something similar in his explanation. No? That he's saying that if these devis, the goddesses, like the those, you say those? Like the those, they belong to another category altogether. Jati is the word. Mm. They are not humans. Again, they're animals, they're devas, devis. Mm. So, how, he says, how is it that our love is not as deep as theirs, although we and he are in the same classification? That's the torment of the gopis. Actually, they are thinking they have more love than us. So they are concluding, but they are in another species. So generally, you see that one loves someone from the same species most. Again, cockroach with cockroach, dog with dog, whatever. So we see that, the goddesses, they have such love for Krishna. Two different species. The deers have such love for Krishna. Two different species. And we are same species, but we don't have that love. I mean, that's their humility. They have more love than all of them put together. But they feel, we don't have that love, because if we will have that love, we will be together with him. And that's not happening. That's not happening. Sanatana Goswami comments here, that here the gopis become restless and bewildered as intense desire to take birth in the society of devis arises in their hearts. As we mentioned, more and more this is... we have to be born as devis. We have to be born as devis. But the interesting dynamic here is that the gopis are lamenting and praying to be born as devis, but actually the devis and devas are seeing the gopis and lamenting, oh, we don't have the type of love that the gopis have. Look how they cry in separation. Look this, look that. They really have love for Krishna, not us. But the gopis are thinking exactly the same thing regarding the... So that's the nature of proper devotional association. I don't have love for Krishna, you have. And the other one is thinking this. It's not like, I don't have devotion, you have. And someone will say, yes, I have, you don't have. Finally, Maharaj, you say some truth. You really understand, no? It's not like that, no? I mean, if I say I don't have devotion for Krishna, I really have to walk the talk. No, it's not that just make lip service. I'm so fallen. Once I remember one devotee was, Once the devotee was saying, I'm so fallen, like you kind of heard that it's good if you say that or something. So he was like always like part of his mantra was, I'm so fallen. So once one devotee who realized, another senior devotee saw that, say, let's see how much he walks the talk. So he came and said, you are so fallen. And he became like, mad, like what? No. So he could only say that, no, but nobody else could say that to him. You follow? I'm so fallen. But if someone said you are a little fallen, like I jump on their neck, basically. No? Only I can say that I'm so fallen, not you. I mean, that means you are really fallen. They confirm the whole fear. Confirm, yeah, you're really fallen. So that's not working like that in the case of real devotees. No? So this example here, gopis and devis. Oh, they have so much love for Krishna, we don't have that. And the other ones are, they have so much love for Krishna, we don't. And of course, if we put in comparison the love of the gopis with the love of the devis, or with the love with any other ladies for that matter, sometimes this comparison is there, Samartha Rati, Samanjasa Rati, and which is the other one? Sadarani Rati, three types of romantic love that we will you will find in the gopis, in the queens, and in the in someone like Kubja, for example. Rupa Goswami makes that definition. And of course, the gopis have the samartarati, the most competent type of love, and between all the types of romantic approach to Krishna. But there is another division, that you, another way of saying the same thing, basically, which is you can speak about love in terms of manda, madhya, and prodha. Manda, madhya, and prodha. So manda means like weak. Madhya means like not so weak, in between. Madhya means intermediate. And prodha means mature. Kanishta, madhyam, uttam, whatever, put the name you want. So prodha is the highest level of love. And this connection is explained. It's a type of love in which the nayaka and the nayika, basically the heroine and the hero, hero in aesthetic terms, the loved and the beloved, cannot tolerate the pain of separation of each other. I mean, cannot go on with their lives without each other. Basically. It's not that you are separated from your beloved. Oh, okay, someday we will meet, no problem, let's see. Sometimes I suffer, I remember. No, no, it's like, no, there's nothing else apart from when that day will be mine, when we will get together, and so on. And the separation makes the heart grow fonder and increases the depth of the union. So that's prodha. You can imagine what are the examples of that, Braja Gopikas. Then madhya means you are separated from your beloved, the separation is tolerated, somehow you can live with that. No? You are not thrown into a pool of desperate, transcendental desperation or something. And the other one, manda, or the weak type of love, is that love that whenever you, I don't know, you love someone or you are in suffering separation from someone, but something happens and you become angry or jealous and you forgot about everything else. You were captured by your mind and this type of inferior emotions. And that is so-called weak love, if you want to call it somehow. And of course, again, needless to say, the prem of the gopis is prodha prem, mature prem, which in which they cannot live without meeting their beloved. I mean, the only way they can live is with the hope we will meet Krishna someday. Or when Krishna left Vrindavan, the only hope was he will return someday. That was the only string that kept their lives, their life earth flowing in their nostrils, basically. They are totally restless to meet Krishna and to embrace Krishna and so on. And also one attribute of this prodha maya, mature love, is that people like them, like the gopis, are attributing their love, their anurag, their prem, to all the living beings around them. They project whatever is in their hearts is overflowing, and they start to see everyone else feeling what we are feeling. That happens quite often. If you are full of envy, you may feel, all of you are envious. Or if I am full of greed, you will, like if you put a lens with red glasses, you see, oh, everything is red. Wow. You say, no, nothing is red. Take the glass out. But with that, you filter reality, basically. So it's a way, there's a way of doing that in the platform of Maya Shakti, but also that happens when you are mad in love. That's the symptom of the highest level of devotees, as we all see. So that's the Venu Gita here. You will see the gopis are seeing the cows, the river, the cloud, the female deer, the flute, the whatever. And they are attributing to all of them all the emotions that they are feeling. All of them are feeling something also. But in this case, they are mostly projecting their own bhavs into overflowing into the whole environment. And they express that, like, and they desire to take birth in those particular forms as to attain that, which actually is a projection of what they have, basically. And again, downplaying their position and admiring the position of everyone else. Full humility. Full humility. And that is the experience of the gopis. Again, they say, we don't have the chance of showing our love to Krishna with our husbands because we don't have the type of love that the devis have. So hopefully we can be born there. But again, if you go to Shastra, they say that Nayam Sriyam Gauni Tantarati Prasadam Jarsu Jarsu Sitam Nali Nagandaru Chan Kutunya Rasatsa Visyabu Jadanna Grihita Kanta Labdasha Shandeo Dagadra Sundari. The fortune that the gopis receive, nobody else received, they say. Not even Lakshmi. they were embraced by the arms of Krishna. Krishna put his arms around their necks in Rasa, Rasotsava, in the festival of Rasa, Rasa Lila. He doesn't even do that as Narayan. You would never hear Narayan is embracing Lakshmi. Narayan is lying and Lakshmi is massaging her feet, his feet. But nothing like let's embrace and let's dance and sing. That's why Lakshmi at one point said, I'm going to Rasa Lila. And the verse say, they receive a fortune that not even the goddess of fortune receive. I mean, Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune, but she didn't have that fortune. So how much is the goddess of fortune? That's why the gopis are called Lakshmi. It's also Sahasra, what is it? Lakshmi Sahasrata, Sambraman Sevyamana. So they are the real, the ultimate Lakshmis. And the verse said, what to speak of the ladies of heavenly planets, whose aroma is like the flower of the lotus, and what to speak of ladies from this world who are considered beautiful according to mundane estimation. Like implying, if Lakshmi didn't receive that fortune, what to speak of the other ladies below Lakshmi, including the Devis, implying the gopis are the topmost. So, but they are lamenting and thinking, may we be born as all of them, if that facilitates our union with Krishna. So there again, projecting their bhava to the environment. Like Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was in Gopi Bhav, Krishna in Gopi. Mahaprabhu is Krishna in Gopi Bhav, in Radha Bhav, specifically, generally. And when he saw Chatak Parvat in Puri or any sand dune for that matter, he didn't saw objectively what was there. He didn't saw Chatak Parvat. He saw Govardhan. Govardhan, 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 Govardhan. Remember when Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas? He wanted to run to Vrindavan and Nityananda place and trick on him and organize everything, prepare everything in Santipur. Say, you organize everything, I will take him to Santipur, but I will cheat him. So, and they carried in a boat and let's go to Vrindavan. Yeah, yeah, let's go to Vrindavan. And they arrived to one place and he told in advance to the boys there, when he asks you where you are, you tell you are, we are in Vrindavan. They were in Bengal. And so Mahaprabhu said, are we close to Vrindavan? The boy said, yes, yes, you are almost arriving. Mahaprabhu was, ah, great. and he said, yeah, here's the Jamuna. So Mahaprabhu was like, and eventually, of course, when he realizes, you cheated me. I mean, we are in Shantipur. Advaita Charya appears and say, Advaita, what are you doing here in Vrindavan? And Advaita starts to chuckle. But I eventually say, well, whatever you are, that's Vrindavan. More man Vrindavan, says at one point Mahaprabhu. My mind is Vrindavan. So again, he's seeing Chatak Parvat, any hill, he's seeing Govardhan. He's seeing any extension of water, he's seeing Jamuna. He's seeing any forest, he's seeing Vrindavan. And then you can see that you are biased. Objectively speaking, it's not like that. But here we are speaking about super subjective vision. Because sometimes in this world, just to be subjective is like a defect. You are biased. You have to be objective, impartial. But here we are speaking about spiritual partiality, transcendental bias, super subjectivity, which is the overflowing of your love extending everywhere. So that's another reality. So again, in this vision, it is that the gopis are seeing the devis, and they project, oh, the devis are feeling all these things that we feel from Krishna. But actually, they are not feeling that. They are fainting. They are in ecstasy, no doubt, but not on the level of the gopis. We made clear there is a big wave, big difference between the two of them. But the gopis are projecting that again, over and over. That's the vision of a topmost devotee. The Bhagavatam describes a Uttam Bhagavat, 11th canto, Sarva Bhutesu Yat Pasyet, Bhagavatatmanam Bhavam, Bhagavatyatmani Bhutani, Esha Bhagavato Uttama. So, Uttam Bhagavat is he who sees Krishna in everything, and who sees everything in Krishna. I mean, it's difficult to. I mean, you have to go there and see that for yourself, because someone says, what does it mean? How? Explain that more. We have to reach that moment. No? But we have a glimpse in this world again here. When you are in love, in this plane, you kind of see the whole world affected by that. It seems like the whole world is in love. And everyone is dancing and moving according to your your inner dynamics. When you are in fear, everything seems like worthy of doubt of suspicion. But maybe you're just projecting your prejudice on the environment. So here we have the ultimate version of that. Again, super subjectivity of the gopis. Super subjectivity of the gopis. So basically that's what I wanted to share today. So interestingly, just before finishing and connecting with the verse we will see tomorrow, remember, in previous verses, the gopis here are trying to hide their bhav. No, they are just like exploding. As we mentioned, the love of the gopis is avahita bhav. They're trying to hide their love. It's like a pressure cooker. No, that it seems nothing is happening. And suddenly, these whistles come like in the form of these gitas or verses. But they try to hide that and not speak about Krishna directly. But in some verses, they cannot but do that and mention him directly. But generally, they try to speak about something as the flute, some other species. But for example, the previous verse, they spoke about a lady, a female lady, the deer. But they have some form of madhurya for Krishna. In this verse, another type of lady, the devi, is having some form of madhurya for Krishna. So they are getting too much exposed in their own madhurya. Too many ladies, too much madhurya. So the nature of their love again is Gupta. Gopi comes from Gupta, trying to hide, because parakia is not legal, basically, in the social dynamics of the Leela. So next loka, next verse, they will try to, again, to cover their prem, and they go to the section of the cows and the calves, which is Vatsalya Bhav. So let's speak about the cows and the calf, Vatsalya Bhav, not trying to hide our own Madhurya Bhav. But some, again, they cannot help but just project their own prem into the cows and the calf, and let's see which is the result of that experiment. We'll continue tomorrow. So we offer our pranam to the song of the gopis, remembering this very beautiful verse of Sri Yudha Mahasaya, Bande Nanda Brajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshnasaya Samharikatod Gitam Punati Bhuvanatriyam. Before leaving Vrindavan, he's singing this last verse. He says, I offer perpetually my pranam to the lotus feet of the ladies of the cow village of Nanda Maharaj, whose kirtan, whose harikata is so powerful, it has the potential to uplift and lighten the three worlds. So we finish with that note. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Sri Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman.